Centralizētais eksāmens angļu valodā – optimālais mācību satura apguves līmenis.
Hello, this is the listening part of your exam in English. It will consist of three tasks. You will hear the texts twice. Task 1. You have 45 seconds to read the task. Speaker 1.
Learning French was more than just learning grammar. Each lesson offered a unique opportunity for cultural exploration. It was also a gateway to experiencing France firsthand during my vacation. Eventually, I was able to explore Paris and other parts of France on my own, something I'd wanted to do since I first read The Three Musketeers for a school assignment. I ordered croissants in Parisian cafes, went on a guided tour at the Louvre, and even did some shopping at the flea markets. And all of that in French.
Speaker 2.
I had to start learning Mandarin since it was a compulsory course at university, and I'm glad I did. Learning Mandarin had its challenges, but it was also incredibly rewarding. As I immersed myself in the variety of characters and tones, I gained so much more than just language skills. Who would have thought that it would have been useful for many things, not only for talking to my future Chinese brother-in-law? In fact, it was speaking Mandarin that helped me get a promotion.
Speaker 3.
I had an absolutely amazing time doing evening classes in German. Each class was like unwrapping a linguistic gift. Taking these courses helped me feel confident enough to speak with the locals while traveling, and I stopped worrying so much about making mistakes. I'm even trying to use German to chat with my German friends and colleagues. The course was a real turning point for me. Now I'm very enthusiastic about learning languages, and I've already applied for a Spanish course.
Speaker 4.
I started studying Japanese, and it was both challenging and rewarding. Although it wasn't easy, I really enjoyed studying in my free time. Learning the different writing systems and grammar rules was difficult, but the lessons were well organized, and the teachers gave us many useful exercises to practice with. Being able to speak the language has helped me feel more at home. I can handle daily tasks more easily, chat with my neighbors, and understand the local culture better.
Speaker 5.
While I knew I would find Spanish useful at work, I actually started the language course a year ago with my kids. It's been great for us as a family to bond through shared learning, even if it meant grappling with grammar and learning vocabulary. The course not only improved our communication skills, but also helped us build a stronger understanding of our Hispanic background. From family dinners where we chat in Spanish, to exploring Hispanic festivals, the language course has enriched our lives in so many ways. We're even planning a trip to Spain now.
Speaker 6.
Taking Italian classes turned out to be more than just language learning. Anna and I happened to sit next to each other in our first lesson, sharing confused looks at tricky pronunciation and laughing at our mistakes. The more Italian we learned, the longer our conversations became, and we discovered shared interests beyond just the language. Somewhere between conjugating verbs and learning about Italian culture, we started dreaming up plans for a road trip through Italian villages. After all, we'd already been on quite a journey together in our language classes.
You have 30 seconds now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time. Speaker 1.
Learning French was more than just learning grammar. Each lesson offered a unique opportunity for cultural exploration. It was also a gateway to experiencing France firsthand during my vacation. Eventually, I was able to explore Paris and other parts of France on my own, something I'd wanted to do since I first read The Three Musketeers for a school assignment. I ordered croissants in Parisian cafes, went on a guided tour at the Louvre, and even did some shopping at the flea markets. And all of that in French.
Speaker 2.
I had to start learning Mandarin since it was a compulsory course at university, and I'm glad I did. Learning Mandarin had its challenges, but it was also incredibly rewarding. As I immersed myself in the variety of characters and tones, I gained so much more than just language skills. Who would have thought that it would have been useful for many things, not only for talking to my future Chinese brother-in-law? In fact, it was speaking Mandarin that helped me get a promotion.
Speaker 3.
I had an absolutely amazing time doing evening classes in German. Each class was like unwrapping a linguistic gift. Taking these courses helped me feel confident enough to speak with the locals while traveling, and I stopped worrying so much about making mistakes. I'm even trying to use German to chat with my German friends and colleagues. The course was a real turning point for me. Now I'm very enthusiastic about learning languages, and I've already applied for a Spanish course.
Speaker 4.
I started studying Japanese, and it was both challenging and rewarding. Although it wasn't easy, I really enjoyed studying in my free time. Learning the different writing systems and grammar rules was difficult, but the lessons were well organized, and the teachers gave us many useful exercises to practice with. Being able to speak the language has helped me feel more at home. I can handle daily tasks more easily, chat with my neighbors, and understand the local culture better.
Speaker 5.
While I knew I would find Spanish useful at work, I actually started the language course a year ago with my kids. It's been great for us as a family to bond through shared learning, even if it meant grappling with grammar and learning vocabulary. The course not only improved our communication skills, but also helped us build a stronger understanding of our Hispanic background. From family dinners where we chat in Spanish, to exploring Hispanic festivals, the language course has enriched our lives in so many ways. We're even planning a trip to Spain now.
Speaker 6.
Taking Italian classes turned out to be more than just language learning. Anna and I happened to sit next to each other in our first lesson, sharing confused looks at tricky pronunciation and laughing at our mistakes. The more Italian we learned, the longer our conversations became, and we discovered shared interests beyond just the language. Somewhere between conjugating verbs and learning about Italian culture, we started dreaming up plans for a road trip through Italian villages. After all, we'd already been on quite a journey together in our language classes.
You have 30 seconds now to finish the task. This is the end of task one. Go on to task two. You have 1 minute to read the task.
Have you ever wondered why you can remember the lyrics to your favorite song from years ago, but sometimes struggle to remember what you studied last week? In today's episode, we're going to dive into the science of something that affects every single one of us, the fascinating world of memory and learning. Let's start by understanding different types of memories. One of the ways our brain stores information is what we call procedural memory or muscle memory. Imagine riding a bike. At first, it seems impossible to balance, pedal, and steer all at once. But once you learn it, your body remembers forever. And then there are those vivid personal memories, like your first day at high school or a family celebration. These autobiographical memories are rich with details, emotions, and sensory experiences. But here's where it gets interesting. Our brain doesn't process all memories the same way. Think about your morning routine. You probably don't remember what you had for breakfast 3 weeks ago, even though it was a recent event. Yet you might vividly remember a breakfast from years ago during a special holiday. This selective memory isn't random. It's part of how our brain efficiently manages information. To understand this better, let's explore how memory actually works. Think of your brain as a storage system with two compartments, short-term and long-term. Your short-term memory can be thought of as a small box where you can only keep about 7 items at once. It's similar to when someone tells you a phone number. You can hold it in your mind briefly, but if you don't write it down or keep repeating it, it disappears, probably in just 15 to 30 seconds. When information needs to be kept longer, it has to be transferred to a vast warehouse, which is your long-term memory. This process is fascinating because it's not just about repetition, it's about making connections. When you learn something new, your brain actually creates links between neurons, building networks of related information. This is why understanding a concept is often more effective than just memorizing it. Now, here's a crucial insight about learning that might change how you study. When you studied a foreign language, you might have noticed that it's easier to remember some phrases, for example, ordering a meal in a cafe, where you actually needed to use them. This is because your brain stores not just the information, but also detail about the environment you learned it in. It becomes what scientists call retrieval cues, like little memory triggers that help you access the information later. But what about forgetting? It's easy to think of it as a failure and something unnatural, but it's actually a necessary process since it makes learning new information possible. Of course, when you learn new things, they can sometimes interfere with older memories, not by erasing them, but by making them harder to access. So the real challenge isn't storing the information, it's finding it later again. This is why sometimes you might feel like you know something but can't quite remember it until someone gives you a hint. Remember, your brain is an incredible learning machine that's constantly working to help you navigate the world efficiently.
You have 1 minute to check your work, then you will hear the text a second time.
Have you ever wondered why you can remember the lyrics to your favorite song from years ago, but sometimes struggle to remember what you studied last week? In today's episode, we're going to dive into the science of something that affects every single one of us, the fascinating world of memory and learning. Let's start by understanding different types of memories. One of the ways our brain stores information is what we call procedural memory or muscle memory. Imagine riding a bike. At first, it seems impossible to balance, pedal, and steer all at once. But once you learn it, your body remembers forever. And then there are those vivid personal memories, like your first day at high school or a family celebration. These autobiographical memories are rich with details, emotions, and sensory experiences. But here's where it gets interesting. Our brain doesn't process all memories the same way. Think about your morning routine. You probably don't remember what you had for breakfast 3 weeks ago, even though it was a recent event. Yet you might vividly remember a breakfast from years ago during a special holiday. This selective memory isn't random. It's part of how our brain efficiently manages information. To understand this better, let's explore how memory actually works. Think of your brain as a storage system with two compartments, short-term and long-term. Your short-term memory can be thought of as a small box where you can only keep about 7 items at once. It's similar to when someone tells you a phone number. You can hold it in your mind briefly, but if you don't write it down or keep repeating it, it disappears, probably in just 15 to 30 seconds. When information needs to be kept longer, it has to be transferred to a vast warehouse, which is your long-term memory. This process is fascinating because it's not just about repetition, it's about making connections. When you learn something new, your brain actually creates links between neurons, building networks of related information. This is why understanding a concept is often more effective than just memorizing it. Now, here's a crucial insight about learning that might change how you study. When you studied a foreign language, you might have noticed that it's easier to remember some phrases, for example, ordering a meal in a cafe, where you actually needed to use them. This is because your brain stores not just the information, but also detail about the environment you learned it in. It becomes what scientists call retrieval cues, like little memory triggers that help you access the information later. But what about forgetting? It's easy to think of it as a failure and something unnatural, but it's actually a necessary process since it makes learning new information possible. Of course, when you learn new things, they can sometimes interfere with older memories, not by erasing them, but by making them harder to access. So the real challenge isn't storing the information, it's finding it later again. This is why sometimes you might feel like you know something but can't quite remember it until someone gives you a hint. Remember, your brain is an incredible learning machine that's constantly working to help you navigate the world efficiently.
You have 1 minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task 2. Go on to task 3. You have 1 minute to read the task.
So you've got a brand new book, and it's called Super Communicators, How to Unlock the Secret Language of Connection. I'm just imagining that if I'd written that book, I would feel tremendous pressure to be an amazing conversation partner. And I would hate to have that expectation always hang over me. Do you feel the pressure I'm describing?
Only in one context, which is that ever so often now, my wife, during a dinner time conversation, when I've like monologued for the last 7 or 8 minutes, will say, you know, there's this book about communication that I think you could read that would really help you a lot. No, I think the answer is that I don't feel that, because one of the big insights from this book and from doing this reporting and this research is that we all have these instincts, many of them created by evolution, to help us figure out how to connect with other people. And so part of what I tried to do with the book is to explain how conversations work so that in some sense, people can stop thinking about having those conversations. They can let their natural instincts take over. Because the truth of the matter is, you are a great conversationalist. You've literally spent your entire life practicing being a conversationalist. And once we understand how conversations work, we can converse and connect with really anyone.
So this is essentially a how-to book, how to have great conversations. But it differs in one important way from most how-to books, which is that most authors of how-to books are really great at whatever their book is about. So Dale Carnegie was really good at winning friends and influencing people, I'm sure. And Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus, they write books about how to golf. But your motivation for researching and writing this book was that you felt like you were bad at communicating. You wanted to get better.
Absolutely. It's a how-to book, but it's also self-help. And by self-help, I mean help myself, right? So I had these two experiences. The first is that I was made this manager at the New York Times and was really good at everything that did not involve communication and was terrible at communication. And it totally caught me off guard. Like, I have an MBA. I've had bosses my entire life. And it was really driven home for me when I would come home and talk to my wife and I'd tell her, like, my bosses don't understand me and my colleagues don't appreciate me. And I'd start complaining. And she would have this really good practical advice. She would say, like, why don't you take your boss out to lunch so you guys can get to know each other a little bit better? But instead of being able to hear her, I would react as if I'd been attacked and be like, I don't understand why you're not supporting me. I want you to be outraged on my behalf. And she would be frustrated because she was trying to give me good advice. And it made me realize there's something going on with communication that I'm just not getting, because sometimes I can have great conversations and sometimes I can't, and I can't figure out what the difference is. And so that's why I got interested in this, was just trying to learn, what do we know about conversation?
So one of the most basic insights in the book, and it sounds totally obvious once you present it, but it's something that I personally was completely oblivious to for the first 40 plus years of my life, is that the person you're talking to can have various different goals from a conversation. You just alluded to it. You were talking to your wife and you wanted empathy. But for most of my life, I thought that the purpose of every meaningful conversation was to find a solution to a problem.
Yeah.
But I was so wrong. I learned along the way, and I was reinforced by your book, that there are all sorts of things people want out of conversations. And one of the most fundamental aspects of being able to talk to people is recognizing that and figuring out what the point is of any given conversation.
You have 1 minute to check your work, then you will hear the text a second time.
So you've got a brand new book, and it's called Super Communicators, How to Unlock the Secret Language of Connection. I'm just imagining that if I'd written that book, I would feel tremendous pressure to be an amazing conversation partner. And I would hate to have that expectation always hang over me. Do you feel the pressure I'm describing?
Only in one context, which is that ever so often now, my wife, during a dinner time conversation, when I've like monologued for the last 7 or 8 minutes, will say, you know, there's this book about communication that I think you could read that would really help you a lot. No, I think the answer is that I don't feel that, because one of the big insights from this book and from doing this reporting and this research is that we all have these instincts, many of them created by evolution, to help us figure out how to connect with other people. And so part of what I tried to do with the book is to explain how conversations work so that in some sense, people can stop thinking about having those conversations. They can let their natural instincts take over. Because the truth of the matter is, you are a great conversationalist. You've literally spent your entire life practicing being a conversationalist. And once we understand how conversations work, we can converse and connect with really anyone.
So this is essentially a how-to book, how to have great conversations. But it differs in one important way from most how-to books, which is that most authors of how-to books are really great at whatever their book is about. So Dale Carnegie was really good at winning friends and influencing people, I'm sure. And Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus, they write books about how to golf. But your motivation for researching and writing this book was that you felt like you were bad at communicating. You wanted to get better.
Absolutely. It's a how-to book, but it's also self-help. And by self-help, I mean help myself, right? So I had these two experiences. The first is that I was made this manager at the New York Times and was really good at everything that did not involve communication and was terrible at communication. And it totally caught me off guard. Like, I have an MBA. I've had bosses my entire life. And it was really driven home for me when I would come home and talk to my wife and I'd tell her, like, my bosses don't understand me and my colleagues don't appreciate me. And I'd start complaining. And she would have this really good practical advice. She would say, like, why don't you take your boss out to lunch so you guys can get to know each other a little bit better? But instead of being able to hear her, I would react as if I'd been attacked and be like, I don't understand why you're not supporting me. I want you to be outraged on my behalf. And she would be frustrated because she was trying to give me good advice. And it made me realize there's something going on with communication that I'm just not getting, because sometimes I can have great conversations and sometimes I can't, and I can't figure out what the difference is. And so that's why I got interested in this, was just trying to learn, what do we know about conversation?
So one of the most basic insights in the book, and it sounds totally obvious once you present it, but it's something that I personally was completely oblivious to for the first 40 plus years of my life, is that the person you're talking to can have various different goals from a conversation. You just alluded to it. You were talking to your wife and you wanted empathy. But for most of my life, I thought that the purpose of every meaningful conversation was to find a solution to a problem.
Yeah.
But I was so wrong. I learned along the way, and I was reinforced by your book, that there are all sorts of things people want out of conversations. And one of the most fundamental aspects of being able to talk to people is recognizing that and figuring out what the point is of any given conversation.
You have 1 minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task 3 and the whole listening test.